I'm Maureen Barnes-Smith, Vice President Sales and Marketing for Unique Vacations Worldwide in Canada. I represent the Sandals and Beaches brands worldwide. So I've been in the travel industry, oh my God, Bob, should I really tell you? It's close to 30 years. Isn't that scary?
I
know I don't look as if I've been in the industry 30 years. I know I started really young. I started really, really, really young.
Welcome to Voices of Travel, The Next Chapters, an interview series that captures the passion, humor, and character of 15 remarkable people as they tell us the stories of their careers in the industry. Maureen, thanks for joining me. I'm hoping you can tell us a bit about your first job in travel.
Yeah, my first job in travel is still the job I have. So my first job in travel was with Unique Vacations Canada. I came to Canada in the early 90s. I heard there was a Sandals office, and I'm like, a Sandals office in Toronto? It seemed a little bit odd. However, when I explored, it was, they were just starting the marketing office for Sandals, and I applied in June, I think, didn't hear anything back from September. I'd given up. And one day I got a call, they want you to come in on Monday. I'm like, come in where? Because I had no idea who was calling me, because it said Unique Vacations. So that's where my journey started. I started as the administrative manager for the office because I came from a very strong administrative background at the University of the West Indies. So I guess at that time, my administrative resume was very impressive because they needed someone in that capacity. So that's how I started.
So what was the industry like then?
It was exciting. To be perfectly honest, there were so many strong characters back then. You know, I remember starting and I would see memos coming in from Sunquest. And I'm like, who's Sunquest? I would see memos coming in from, you know, Transat. I'd see memos coming in from all of these different companies. They're Canada Vacations for sure. And I would be like, you know, who is Leo DeRoche? Who is, you know, Pat Brigham? Who are these people? You know, where's Merton Street? So all of those things I had to learn coming in. But pretty soon, I figured out the landscape. You know, I knew who all the big players were and still are to a large extent. Some of the names have changed, but the players are still very much the same. So it was exciting for me. It was scary because I was coming into an industry in which I had no sea legs. I had no idea what to do. But I learned that, you know, dealing with people is as simple as just being respectful. And when you give respect, you get respect. So for me, it was an easy lesson, even though it was a hard industry to get into.
Did you have a mentor? Did you have somebody who influenced your career?
So initially when I started, I would say it was the late Donna Haynes. She was the person who hired me. She was my boss at the time. She was the director for Canada, and she passed away recently. And I must say a lot of the lessons learned in terms of professionalism, in terms of even the way I speak, in terms of how you carry yourself as not only a female in the industry, but certainly as a professional within the industry of Caribbean descent, I learned from her. She was a stickler for detail. She had these amazing functions. Bob, you will remember, we used to sing at these events. We used to put on our own performances. She had a fantastic voice. But beyond that, she had such a personality that, you know, she taught me how to be a true professional. Stepping down from that, you know, we then had Gary Sadler, who was the successor to her role. And Gary and I have been friends for, I would say, the same almost 30 years I've been in the industry. And the good thing with Gary is that every time I get a promotion, he stays my boss. So we have the most amazing working relationship. People find it hard to think that we're boss and employee, but we don't have that kind of relationship. We have more of a mutual respect. And I think my biggest mentor is Mr. Stewart. Once you met Mr. Stewart, you literally could not forget him. And it's interesting because I never met Mr. Stewart until I worked for Sandals, Unique Vacations. But I knew of Mr. Stewart long before I started working for Sandals because he was such a force in the Caribbean. He knew, you know, he's the one that saved the Jamaican dollar back in the late 80s, early 90s, by pumping in millions of dollars from tourism every week. And that stabilized the currency in Jamaica. So as a Jamaican coming to Canada, I certainly understood who Bud Stewart was. I certainly understand the force of nature that he was, and I understand the impact he had on the Caribbean. So he, for me, overall, someone of Caribbean descent coming to Canada, learning and going into an industry that he actually was the person I was working with and for, that for me was huge.
You mentioned Donna Haynes and the fact that she was a strong leader, a strong person, and I wanted to talk a little bit about diversity, equity, and inclusiveness in the industry. Can you talk about your experience? Has the industry, you know, given women a role, given Black women a role, has it treated women like they should be treated? Sorry, that was probably badly asked, wasn't it?
No, it's a good ask. But I think you just need to look around, Bob. If you look around at the industry, you will see either the expanse or the limit of diversity and inclusivity. You asked about, you know, as a Black woman in the travel industry, there are not many of us here, especially at the executive level, you know, at the C-suite level. It's almost not non-existent. You know, I can talk about my counterparts, I can talk about my JTB colleagues, I can talk about my tourist board colleagues. But beyond that, there's not much that you see. So I feel that I hold a very unique position as the VP sales for a marketing company, a brand like Sandals and Beaches worldwide in Canada. I think it's a very unique position and one that I embrace with a lot of responsibility, because I constantly struggle to make sure that my office and the people we deal with are always embracing diversity and inclusiveness, because it is important. And if you look at the makeup of my office, you know, I have everybody. But again, we always make sure that we are totally inclusive in everything that we do. We do not discriminate in any way at all. But I think the industry has a lot to catch up. And I'm also a part of the ACTA Diversity and Inclusion Committee, because they've also taken steps to make sure that the industry is a little bit more representative of what we really look like, not just at the base level, but at all levels of our industry.
And what about the opportunities for advancement to senior positions or C-level suites? Has that changed?
I don't think it's changed that much. As I said, I think I work for a very diverse company. And I think growing up in Sandals, starting out as an administrative manager less than 30 years ago, to the top level, to the top tier level within the organization, I don't think it's a reflection of the Canadian travel industry itself as much as it is a reflection of my company. And I think both things work together. But I think my position and the where I occupy is really more so a reflection of just the maverick that Mr. Stewart was. Like, he embraced everybody. And the more you showed how smart you were and how willing you were to learn, is the more opportunities that open up to you. And I never shied away from that. I'm a learner. I'm a lifetime learner. So I've always embraced education, one. I've always embraced learning from other people, learning from their mistakes, learning from my mistakes, and also just looking at best practices. So I think within our organization, we have that culture, but I think we still have a way to make up within the Canadian travel industry. I think it's better. It's better than it has ever been, but I think there's still steps that we have to take to make sure that the representation at the highest level represents what our nation looks like, and that we have that across the board.
Maybe you could share some of the steps that you think need to be taken, Maureen.
Well, first of all, I think I talked about the ACTA Diversity and Inclusion Committee. I think that's an important step, because I think it's engaging at all levels, among all industry companies. It's not just hoteliers, it's airline partners, it's people within, you know, from the BIPOC community. It's embracing everybody. And I think that taking a commitment towards that, maintaining that, strengthening that, I think is a good step. I think people just have to be fair. I think we need to be fair without fear. So F-A-I-R without F-E-A-R. Because I think that if we don't fear what other people look like, what they sound like, what their thought processes are like, I think we have much better quality of work coming out. And I've noticed that embracing even the underdog, sometimes you get the most amazing ideas. And for me, I think just making sure that we're not in judgment, of anybody that doesn't look like us, who doesn't sound like us, who doesn't necessarily reflect our views, gives us such a diversity that we just need to embrace that. I think the building blocks are there. As I said, ACTA has started it, but I think within each organization, I think the top level management has to really take a look at their employee pool. And they got to say, okay, does this represent what my community looks like? Does this represent what Canada looks like? Does this represent what happens when I walk through the airport? And if it doesn't, then they have to take the requisite steps to make sure that they fix that. Because I've done that internally. We have done that internally within our organization.
It's, what shall I say? It's a bit of an ugly world these days. And I'm just wondering if you hope that can happen. And can the industry play a role in helping that happen? Spread the good word.
I certainly think so. What destinations are we going to? Or the travel industry is one that interacts at all levels with every single person, with every culture, with every race. You're not going to somewhere where you were born. You're going to somewhere that's brand new, where you're meeting different cultures, you're seeing different experiences, you're meeting different people. So I think the fact that that's what we're selling, we gives us an opportunity to actually embrace that even more, because we are the leaders in terms of getting people out of their comfort zone. So you're telling someone, book a trip to go bungee jump. Like, really? You know, take a trip to go skydiving. You know, take a trip to go swim with the whales, swim with the dolphins. You know, take an adventure, a safari off somewhere you've never been. What's so difficult in embracing that within your own organization to say, you know what? I'm selling travel to the world. Why can't I bring the world into travel? And I think we have a very important role to play in that, because we're the ones who are telling people, get out of your comfort zone. Go travel. Get off the beaten path. Go take a train through the Rocky Mountains. You know, go to the Galapagos Islands. Go to sandals and beaches. Go anywhere you want to go. Go swim at the pigs. We're telling people to embrace all of those things in a way that says, be adventurous, be courageous. But then within our organizations, we're saying, let's be the same. No, it doesn't work. We literally have to be able to embrace that same culture that we're trying to get people to travel. We have to embrace that internally to say, you know what? Let's be adventurous within our own walls. Let's be adventurous in the people that we hire. Let's be adventurous in the way we treat people. Let's be courageous. Because at the end of the day, you have to embrace differences. It's what makes the world go round. So I think we have an important role. Short answer, yes. I think we have an important role to play. And I'm very, very hopeful. Very hopeful.
What was the all-inclusive space like back in the 90s? And how has it changed? How is it going to continue to change? Why does it have to change?
Okay, so not easy questions, but questions that I know because I've been in the industry since, you know, in the early 90s when I started out in this industry, all inclusive was literally having a few restaurants. All inclusive for us has evolved. We evolved as a brand, and I speak personally, from all inclusive to luxury included to, you know, above luxury. Where we are now, we sit at the pinnacle of the industry because things have changed so much. People are looking for different things. People are more savvy. So what we've learned is that we've had to evolve our product. And our chairman led this drive in terms of being more innovative. So he kept adding things. So he said, instead of having two restaurants, I'm going to give you 15 restaurants. And it's going to be five-star dining. We kept evolving with the trends as they came along. We moved from regular rooms to suites. So the product has certainly evolved, but so has the landscape of all-inclusive. You have a lot of brands now that offer all-inclusive. The real fact is when people leave Canada, they want to know what we're going to spend. Where we are now, oh my gosh, it's new, it's exciting. We call it, in our world, we call it 2.0. We call it Sandals 2.0 because we realize that a hotel room is just not a hotel room. It has never been. And if you remember, Bob, you know our chairman. He used to boast about the quality of rooms and suites. Our new executive chairman, Adam Stewart, he's totally committed to Sandals 2.0. And people say, well, what is Sandals 2.0? Sandals 2.0 is just taking what we have and bringing it that much higher, making it that much more appealing to different audiences. Again, you know, you have the younger audiences who are looking for one thing. You have, you know, my age group that looking for something else. And then you have the in-between, you have the honeymooners, you have the empty nesters, you have the retired grandparents who are now taking their kids on, you know, destination travel, and you have multi-generational families. So we have had to evolve with our brands in terms of also bringing in our beaches brand, which is not just for couples or for adults, but we have expanded to make sure that we're offering these experiences to every single person in the world who wants to go. And as you see big brands moving into the all-inclusive space, you realize that Mr. Stewart knew something when he started this in 1981. He kind of had a little genius factor that said, this is the way to go. Because the space back then was Sandals, Super Clubs, Club Med. I mean, you can't count the number of all-inclusives that exist right now. So you certainly see where the space has expanded and where everyone is moving in that direction. But, you know, we continue to evolve. We continue to set next level expectations. And I guess that's where our 2.0 comes in, because our executive chairman he's a young, dynamic individual who really thinks that, you know, you have to improve on perfection.
Can we talk about sustainability? It's something that's always been part of Sandals' world. I'm just wondering if it is becoming more important to travelers today.
Well, sustainability has always been important for us. We have Earth Check certification at all of our resorts. We've moved away from plastic straws to single-use paper straws. We have environmental managers at all of our hotels. We have a very robust sustainable program in terms of also through our foundation, where we're looking at the environment. It has always been a huge part. We are in the Caribbean. And Bob, you know that the Caribbean, places like the Caribbean, are some of the most vulnerable areas to global warming, to the environmental changes. And if we don't do something as a huge brand within the Caribbean where we operate, where we earn our livelihood, then we're threatening our own very existence. We operate there, we live there, so we have to make sure that we maintain those steps to make sure that the environment is paramount, and sustainability is key to that.
I'm just wondering, in the conversations you have with agents going forward, how important is the discussion of climate change and sustainability going to be? I mean, do they need to talk to their clients? Can you give them an understanding of what's necessary, of what they need to talk about to their clients?
I think the clients are asking the questions of the agents. I think they have to get up to the par with that, because I think a lot of clients now are more discerning. They are choosing destinations. They're looking. And if you look at all the research that has been done in the last couple of years, I can't remember who did this research, so I'm not going to quote because I may misquote. But I remember there was a huge survey that came out last year that talked about the importance of environmental impact, your footprint. You know, this is something that's a part of our corporate social responsibility goals. One, the first thing you have to think about is, what is your environmental footprint? So we do that. We're replanting mangroves. We're doing all of these things. We're maintaining the, you know, the natural flora and fauna of where we operate. We're trying to minimize our footprint because we do realize that global warming is huge. And I think the clients are going to be the ones that are holding us as companies accountable. And one, they're going to demand that their agents understand. So I think it's imperative that in our training with our travel agents, that we include that as a part of it. Say, listen, you got to make sure that you understand what we're doing in terms of the environment, in terms of minimizing our footprint, but also maintaining the spaces where we live. I'm Jamaican. My colleagues are all, a lot of them are Caribbean people. We're island people. And if we don't preserve our islands and our destinations outside of just tourism, then we have nowhere to go. And the people who, all the thousands of employees that depend on us, they're not going to have a beach to take care of. And we see that. If you have driven around Jamaica, if you have driven around any of the Caribbean islands, you can see the physical impact of global warming. The beaches are a little bit shorter. You know, the amount of sand that used to be there is a little bit less because the tides get rougher as the waters get warmer, and you know, it's affecting the sea life. All of those things. And I'm a little bit of an environmental fanatic, sorry.
So let's talk about events. In the 30 years that you've been here, you've seen Gulf Wars. You've seen Y2K. You've seen 9/11, global financial meltdowns, and then COVID. And I'm just wondering if you can talk about how external events have such a huge impact on the industry, and how the heck has the industry survived?
You know what, Bob? I think we're the most resilient industry ever, because these external events affect us so much. Like, I remember SARS, you know, our bookings just tunneled. I remember after, you know, 9/11, the bookings just tumbled. But then what happened? Canada rebounded much quicker than the US. So we got a boon out of that. So again, it's cyclical, and it's I think it's getting worse. We've never seen anything like COVID-19. We've never seen the whole world shut down. And, you know, this is 2023, and a lot of us are just barely limping back. You know, 2023, I think, for most people within travel, is the year where they're seeing normalcy compared to, say, 2019. I know for us it's the same. We did good last year, but this year we're really seeing a recovery from COVID 2020, and we're seeing that return to optimism. But I think the industry as a whole certainly has that resilience. And I don't know if it's just the spirit of us who are in travel. Like, we seem so hard to defeat. Like they said, you know, we're down, but we're never out. I think the personalities within the travel industry have a key role to play, because they're people of such spirit and fierceness that they're hard to beat. And, you know, we all get up and we all dust off ourselves and say, ooh, COVID, oof, that was a long one. But then, you know, 3 years out and we're looking forward to next year, and we're saying, okay, well, nothing is going to be as bad as COVID. So we kind of feel a little bit strengthened by saying, oh, if we survive COVID, we can survive anything. But I think it's just really the spirit of all the people within the industry and how we interconnect and how we relate with each other that gives us that strength. Because I know I can call on Baxter. I know I can call on Air Canada Vacations. I know I can call on WestJet, on Travel Brands. I can call on all my partners. And it was amazing the way we bonded together during COVID, because everybody came together. Well, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? We shared so much intelligence in the market. And I think that's what speaks to the resilience and the survivability of the travel industry.
Technology has always been a big part of this industry. I know in the 1990s, it was the internet, and it was the end of travel agents, that wonderful word, disintermediated. And now we have AI, and I'm just wondering where technology fits in the all-inclusive space. Support for agents, that kind of thing.
You know what? I have not gotten there yet. I'm one of the slower uptakers on, you know, the bigger and the more robust side of technology, meaning AI and what's coming next. What I know, what works for us, you know, I used a phrase this morning. I was actually having a conversation and my husband said the phrase. I was talking about teamwork, and he says field work. And I says field work makes the dream work, because we believe in being in the field. And one of the things that I think, no matter what obstacles you have, is that people have to see you. And within travel, I think the relationships is what has built travel for me and for us over the years. And I think being in the field, not physically being out all the time, because COVID showed us that you couldn't be out. But, you know, we were on those Zoom calls, and technology afforded us that opportunity. So I can't negate the effect of it. We were on those, you know, beachside vacations, which was just a background. And they're like, oh my God, I like your pool. I like your view this morning. And, you know, you're sitting up and leaning back and coming out of the pool. But again, technology certainly afforded us the opportunity to survive throughout COVID. So I don't think we can negate the effect of that. But in terms of artificial intelligence, I have no clue. I'm one of those that are, as I said, I'm a slow uptaker. I'll get there. But right now, I know what makes my travel industry work is seeing people, building relationships, knowing that if you have a problem with a sandals booking, you're going to call and you're not going to get a bot that's going to just listen to a bunch of scripted questions. They're going to say, Bob, what happened? Okay, so you went and the air conditioning wasn't working and you met with the director of guest services, and what did they say? And for that, I think we do need still a lot of human interaction within our industry. I know for certain that the hotel level or delivery is 100% human, because one of the things that makes us different, as people always talk about, is the staff. The staff makes it flow. We can sell a $100,000 vacation here, and they fly business class seats to the destination, and they get through the airport on a VIP transfer, and they get to the hotel in a beautiful car, and they're getting out of the lobby. And that's where the interaction in destination starts. So everything leads up to that. And if that bellman who meets that guest does not deliver on that promise that they've gotten from booking through to getting to the front lobby, the whole vacation is ruined. And if they get into that room and it's not up to par with what they bought, and if they get to the bar and the service is not what they expect, and the food is not what they expect, then I think the delivery fails. And for me, only humans can give you that.
So if somebody comes to you and they ask your advice on whether they should come into the travel industry, what would you say? Come on in or run the other way?
You know what? It depends on who. It depends on who it is. I think we have a phrase, and our chairman used to use it, or executive chairman has used it, and I've coined it. He says, we hire the talent and we train the skill. So I think it's so important to look at the people who are coming within the travel industry. Some of them are coming with the skill set, and yes, they understand travel. But I think if we pick the right talent, I'm going to be absolutely, I need you on my team yesterday. Because I think it's so important to make sure that you have to know what your industry is. You have to know what your product is. And you have to know the employee that's going to fit with your product. And again, if you have the personality, I think I'm going to say 100% yes. Come run with me. We're going to run with the bulls. We're going to go explore everything that there is in travel. But I think if someone is coming and expecting the easy, because travel used to be very easy. You used to sit in a travel agency, whether it was a P. Lawson or a Carlson or one of those agencies that you remember as legacy agencies within the industry, Sears Travel. You used to walk in. They never had to go outside. People walked in through the doors. Like, oh my God, I want to go away on a trip to wherever. Okay, come on in and sit. They literally never had to leave their desk. Now, a lot of travel agents are remote. So some of them have to drive a wrap car, like you know we have. So people have to recognize them as a travel agent. So unless you're particularly skilled in getting out within your community, within where the spaces where your clients are, then you're not going to succeed. Because it's no longer a pull, it's a push industry. You have to be able to push your service, push your niche, push what you have to offer, because there's so much competition also. So it depends on who is coming in. If they have the talent, we'll train the skill. But if they don't have the talent, I don't think it's going to be a hard industry to survive in nowadays. You have to have that thing, that it factor.
So look at your crystal ball, and 10 years down the road, what's the industry going to look like?
10 years?
Is that too far?
It's far, Bob. Ask me next year. Ask me 24. Ask me 2024. 5 years is even too long. You know what? I think one of the lessons I've learned is to live today. And I've learned in travel, I have to plan. Like my budgets take me to next year. So I have to plan what I'm going to do a year in advance. And I do have to have projections. Where do I want to be in 5 years? But 2020 taught me it doesn't matter. Whatever projections you have, something bad happens, you're going to have to revisit that. So what I try to do is every single day, and with the team in Canada here, and I think as a corporation, we're embracing that more and more, is you got to have plans. You have to have plans, but you also have to have fail-safes just in case. So you have to have, it's not even a plan B. You just have to have plans, period. And you have to have a scenario plan. Okay, so what if this happens? What if that happens? So I can't predict what's going to happen, not even when I leave this interview. Because for me, I'm hoping they don't tow my car. Well, you told me you're going to pay for it. David. So I'm good. Okay, David will pay for it. But the point of what I'm saying is I've learned just to live in the moment. Because, and even with travel, yes, we're booking people's destination 6 months. We're saying, you know, my son just got married in Turks and Caicos. It was booked last May. And up to the day I got on that plane to Turks and Caicos, it's like I could hardly breathe. Because I'm like, it's hurricane time. And there was a system that formed a week out. And I was freaking out totally. I'm like, oh my God, the hurricane is going to ruin his wedding. It passed. We had not even a drop of rain for a whole week. And I breathed a sigh of relief. So I can't even think a week out. Because our industry is, as you said, and you said it before, it's so precarious. Every single external factor affects us. Whether it's the weather, a hurricane, whether it's, you know, illness, whether it's something random, an airplane that, you know, goes off. People decide, oh my God, I'm terrified of airplanes. I'm only going to take trains. You never know what's going to affect you. But I think just having the spirit that says whatever comes, we're going to embrace it. Whatever comes, we're going to ride through it. Whatever comes, we're going to survive it as we have survived everything so far. I think the spirit of that is what makes us just go forward. So predictability, I have no clue. My crystal ball, I would be gone on a boat somewhere in hanging out today, drinking non-alcoholic drinks because I don't drink. But again, for me, it's just really having that spirit that gets up every day that says, today is a good day. And I'm going to make the most of today. I'm going to plan for tomorrow and next year. But just in case we have another COVID, I'm going to be ready for it again. And just in case it's something else, I'm going to figure it out. And I think that's the spirit that we have to continue having, that optimism, that drive, the persistence that says it's going to be okay because we're in travel and we're the best. And we love being in travel. And Bobby, you know, we've been in travel too long, but it's not long enough.
Last question, if you want to answer. I've asked you a bunch of questions, but is there a question that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
There are many. Oh. Many you could have asked me. You could have asked me how I stay so young after 30 years of stress.
I was trying to be professional here.
It's okay. Bob, we're friends. It's okay. Is there really professional? Or does everything, it's blurred lines everywhere, right?
Enjoying the day.
Just another day in paradise, as Gary would say. Yeah, no, I think for me, this is a great opportunity just to kind of, you know, give a view of what I've seen in 30 years. But I think just to reiterate, what I've seen in travel is resilience. I've seen talent. I've seen, you know, strength. I've seen people who really care about each other. And one of the things in the Canadian landscape I've seen is that, yeah, competition is thriving. It's healthy. But there's so much respect within the industry here that, you know, I could be your competitor today and tomorrow I'm your employee or employer or we're friends. So I think Canada has maintained that level of, you know, camaraderie, which I think is important. So we're not as cutthroat as other places in the world. And I think that speaks to not just the travel industry, but just the spirit of Canadians in general. It's a beautiful country. And yeah, we have lots of issues. We have lots of challenges. But I think mutual respect and the ability to embrace every culture, every difference, to be really inclusive, I think that's where the future is for us, is that we have to be open-minded. We have to be fair, and we have to deal with everybody with respect. And I think if we do all of those things, we're good. We can ride anything that comes along. I think we're good.
Thank you so much for telling us your story, Marie. And thanks to all of you for joining me for this episode. I'm Bob Mowat, executive editor of Canadian Travel Press, and I hope you'll join me for another remarkable conversation on Voices of Travel, the next chapters.